that man behind the curtain.
All that hate's gonna burn you up, kid.
Keeps me warm.
You'll put down your rock and I'll put down my sword and we'll try and kill each other like civilized people.
Hello and welcome to the Red 7 MovieCast, the official podcast of the Rouge Cinema. This is episode 34 for Monday, July 30th, 2018. I'm your host, Hemant Naidu, and you can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at HJNaidu. That's H-J-N-A-I-D-U. So this week I'm going to be talking about two movies that I watched. The first one is Rampage, the action film starring Dwayne Johnson, a giant ape, and a bunch of monsters. So this one was recently released on Blu-ray, so I watched that one. And the second one is a Netflix original film, a romantic comedy called Set It Up, and this one is film number 17 in my 52 films directed by women project. So before I get into that, I wanted to talk about a couple other things that I did watch. So the first one is a Amazon Prime series called Sneaky Pete, starring Giovanni Ribisi. So there's two seasons of this on Amazon Prime, and each season is 10 episodes long, and they run at about, each episode runs at about 45 minutes, I think, on average. So I talked briefly about this last episode because I had actually started it last week and just got two episodes in, so I didn't really talk too much about it. So over the course of this past week, I managed to watch both season one and two. Yeah, so I had a really good time with it. It was pretty decent TV series. So the premise of it is, so Giovanni Ribisi is a con man and he is in prison and just about to get released from prison. And his cellmate, played by Ethan Embry, so you might remember him from the movies from the 90s, mid-90s, I think, Can't Hardly Wait, and Empire Records, and a bunch of stuff. He was kind of playing, he always played that kind of like the quiet kind of guy, everyday guy. So he is in this one, and he is the cellmate of Giovanni Ribisi's character, so Marius, and Ethan Embry plays Pete. So over the course of their time in the cell, you know, this cellmates, Pete always tells these stories about when he was a kid and spent all this time at his grandparents' farm and just talked about, you know, his grandparents quite a bit and his cousins and all these good times and good memories that he had. So the thing with Pete is that he and his mother had a falling out with his family, I think 20 years ago. So he hadn't actually seen his family in 20 years. Over the course, you know, of them being cellmates, I think Marius, the con man, played by Giovanni Ribisi, he got the impression that Pete's family had money. And with Marius, he is actually, well, as soon as he gets out of prison, him and his brother, they owe something like $100,000 to some, I guess he's some, you know, crime boss or something in New York. So basically he needs to come up with $100,000 or, you know, they're both dead or whatever. So, you know, over the course of him being a cellmate with, Pete, he comes up with this plan that maybe he can, you know, go in as a con man into Pete's family and actually, you know, pretend to be Pete because no one's seen him in 20 years. So no one knows what he looks like. But, you know, with all this information Marius has gotten over the years from being a cellmate, he thinks he can pull it off, you know, with all these stories of, you know, Pete's memories and all that type of stuff and just stuff he's learned about his family over those conversations. So that's basically what the story is about for the, for both seasons. And, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but so, you know, Giovanni Ribisi, I've always liked him. He's pretty strong in this. His character is, you know, he's likable, but he's also, you know, a con man. So, you know, he's got all these bad qualities as well, but he is, you can see that even though he is a con man, he does still have feelings and, you know, he gets attached to these, you know, these people that he's trying to con as he becomes part of their family playing, you know, as Pete. So this series is actually produced by Bryan Cranston of, you know, Breaking Bad fame. And Bryan Cranston is actually in season one and he plays that crime boss that, Marius and his brother Eddie owe money to. So the, you know, in the course of the, you know, this series, including season two, we get to learn that, you know, this family that, you know, Pete had kind of built up to be, you know, this loving and caring family. I mean, they are loving and caring, but we find out over the course, you know, of this series that maybe they're not as squeaky clean as we had, you know, as you'd think going into it. And we start to learn about these, you know, the demons that this family has and, you know, some of these problems they have. So maybe they're not quite, you know, what everyone is expecting. And that was really cool, like seeing that stuff coming out and being revealed over the course of the series. You know, you have that mystery and it's, you know, it adds to that. Plus it adds to kind of the fun stuff with the con and just kind of, you know, seeing Giovanni Ribisi, you know, going through with various cons. I mean, he's got this big long con that he's doing with the family, but he also has to do these other little things. So it's a pretty good series. The season two focuses, I mean, still on the family, but things get a little bit more high stakes, I think. And it doesn't have anything to do, you know, with that crime boss from the first season. It's something new, you know. So most of the, I think probably like the first seven episodes of each series, you know, focuses on the main story and whatnot. But then that kind of leads up to usually the final two or three episodes really focus on their final job. And, you know, it feels at that point, it kind of turns into like a heist movie, you know, with all your, you know, basic tropes that come with a heist movie. And that was, you know, the most enjoyable parts for me, kind of seeing them, you know, everything leading up to these big heists or big, you know, kind of finalizing the con, you know, seeing that play out in the end, I think was probably the most exciting part. So as soon as I was done season two, I did a quick Google to see if it had been renewed for a third season. And actually, just this past week, I think on July 29th, a couple days ago, or I guess on the 28th, I think, it was announced that they actually renewed season three and they're going to start filming that right away here. So I'm looking forward to that and seeing where season three takes us, because, you know, with season two and the family, you know, some more questions have arisen that we don't get answers to. So I'd like to see them explore that more in season three. So yeah, if you have Amazon Prime, I would recommend checking out Sneaky Pete. It's pretty good entertainment, and, you know, 10 episodes a season. It's, you know, it's not too long. It's kind of pretty perfect. I think 8 episodes is my ideal. And that's what Goliath was. I think Goliath, the one with Billy Bob Thornton, that one is 8 episodes a season. I think that's the best for a TV series for me. Like I can never handle any of the actual network TV series that run at like 23 episodes a season. That's too much for me. And I usually think it's more filler than anything. So, you know, when it's nice and condensed down to this 8 to 10 episode seasons, I think that's pretty ideal. And you get some pretty strong storytelling in that. So yeah, Sneaky Pete, I highly recommend checking that one out. So I wrapped that up on, I wrapped that up on the Sunday yesterday in the afternoon or maybe early evening. And then I figured I'd find another TV series to watch. So I was kind of going through, I was hoping there was another YouTube premium one, original YouTube show that I would be interested in watching. So I went through the list of those. It's not a huge list and there's nothing really that caught my attention. So then I went to Amazon Prime and I was considering maybe starting Bosch. I had heard decent things about that. And then I remembered that I actually have yet to watch season two of Fargo. I really liked season one, so I knew season two was on Netflix, so I went into Netflix and fired up season two of Fargo. So I think I'm only an episode and a half into that, but it's been pretty good, what I was expecting. I don't know why it took me this long to get to it, but I'm looking forward to getting through that this week. I think it is 10 episodes, so yeah, I should be able to motor through that this week and over this week and the weekend and talk about that next week. The thing I like about it is, you know, it's separate than season one, but is actually, it actually takes place, what, 40 years prior, 30 years prior to season one. So it takes place in 1979, and it is actually about the father of the main character from season one. So you actually get to see the main character from season one just as a little girl in this at the beginning in the opening episode. So, you know, there's a little bit of a tie-in, but it's not the same story. So I think that's pretty cool how it keeps it in the same you know, universe, but it doesn't, you know, continue on as a true sequel or anything like that. So I think that's pretty interesting. And what else did I watch? So yeah, Ready Player One was released on Blu-ray this past Tuesday. So I had pre-ordered that. Was pretty excited to get that because I really enjoyed that movie. I saw it a couple times in the theater. I think I saw it opening night. And then I took my son a couple days later to see it at one of the matinees because I knew he would enjoy that as well, which he did. So he had been asking me for a really long time when it was coming out on Blu-ray, and I kept telling the date, so that finally arrived, and it came in the mail. And yeah, we were hoping to watch it that day, the Tuesday. It arrived, so I pre-ordered it from Amazon, and it actually arrived a day early before release day on the Monday. So he and I were hoping to watch it that night, but for whatever reason, he was having a pretty rough day. And yeah, it just made more sense for him to go to bed than for us to stay up a little bit later and watch that movie. So we watched it Tuesday. And yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it, you know, just as much as I enjoyed it the first two times. I don't know, there's something about this movie that, you know, really connects with me. I know there's a lot of nostalgia stuff here, and I know that stuff plays really well with me. So that's probably big, you know, a big part of why I enjoyed it so much. And I think, I don't know, I think the action in it as well, played really well with me. I think Spielberg, he knows how to direct action, and I think that shows in all his movies because it just kind of, you know, it stands out from other stuff that I see. And, you know, even with the, you know, all the action here, most of the action here is, you know, animated. I think, you know, still, you know, you still see Spielberg's direction on that. And yeah, as soon as that movie's over, like for whatever reason, I feel like I can just turn it on again and watch it immediately right after. So yeah, the thing that makes kind of angers me about it is, so I still buy the physical media for all my movies, or, you know, 99.9% of my movies, because I like having the physical media. I like collecting, and I like, you know, having that stuff. And I'm not paranoid about most things, but, you know, I don't like the idea of just buying the digital copies and having that, you know, managed by some other company that I don't know is going to be there in 10 years, 20 years. I know my Blu-rays and DVDs are still going to be around in 10 to 20 years, you know, other than some catastrophic event that, you know, I lose them all, or they, you know, lose them in a fire or something like that, but I have them. So anyway, I don't want to get into that again, but so when I do, I still do like having the digital copies of these movies. So whenever I buy, you know, the new movies and new releases, they always have, or, you know, 99% of the time, they have a digital copy included with them. So my preference for that digital copy is iTunes, because for the most part in our house, we are, you know, mostly Apple products. So we have, you know, Apple TVs connected to our TVs all over the place. We all have iPhones and all that stuff, right? So I like being able to just, you know, fire up one of these movies on iTunes. If we're up in the living room, you know, I'm making supper or something, I can throw a movie on iTunes on our TV there, and it plays well. So I like that. And my kids like that too, because they can easily just go to one place and be able to, you know, pick a movie from, you know, from our digital copies. Because, I mean, having the Blu-rays and DVDs are nice, but, you know, I mostly, well, I guess, exclusively save those for watching in the theater, right? So it's not like I'm just going to go sit down in the theater and watch a movie, because I'm a person that likes to put movies on kind of all the time, just kind of in the background. I'm not going to do that with a Blu-ray. And really, I only have a Blu-ray player for the theater, which is a PS3, and then I have one in our basement family room, which is, I play on a PS4. But just having that digital copy is so much easier, just being able to turn it on, you know, in the spur of the moment. So anyways, the thing that makes me mad is that Ready Player One is, the copy that came is an ultraviolet version, or a Flixer version or something. So that wouldn't be a problem if I was able to watch those somehow on our Apple TV. I also have a Roku. So the thing is in Canada, you used to be able to watch ultraviolet movies on Roku, because the Roku had a Flixer app, and it also had a Cinema Now app, which allowed you to play ultraviolet movies. But for whatever reason, those apps no longer support working in Canada. I think Cinema Now is just done now, and Flixer, the app, just doesn't work in Canada, so there's no way for me to watch any ultraviolet movie on any native app on an Apple TV or a Roku. So being in Canada, I can't do that. So, I mean, AirPlay does work on, you know, if you're using an Apple TV, but with the, so you basically, they suggest opening up your Flixster app and AirPlaying with that. But the thing is, the Flixster app does not have an AirPlay option. So you can't like send the movie to be handled by your device, like your Apple TV. So instead you have to do like the iPhone allows you to do a screen mirroring. So you can turn on screen mirroring for whatever Apple device. So my Apple TV will say in my living room, I can mirror my iPhone to that. So everything that happens on my iPhone happens on the TV as well. But so then I can fire up Flixster and then watch the movie on the TV. But then my phone is basically also playing the movie, so I can't use my phone for anything, right? Like, so that's pretty lame. So I've Googled this on multiple occasions, and many people have Googled this within Canada, asking if there's a way to stream ultraviolet movies somehow. And yeah, it's basically, no, you can't if you live in Canada. You have to use an AirPlay option or screen mirroring or something like that. So that's crappy. And yeah, so the Ready Player One version came, and it's ultraviolet. So yeah, I can't just throw that on, you know, upstairs while I'm cooking supper or something like that. So, I mean, it seems more and more movies now are coming out, and they seem, more of them seem to be this ultraviolet version, which sucks for me. And yeah, I don't know. That's just a little bit of a rant I have. So I think I'm considering, I used to use Plex. I used to rip all my Blu-rays and DVDs, or I started to rip my Blu-rays and DVDs. It's such a big undertaking and so much time. And then I would have those copies available on a server that I have. And then I would use Plex, which is like a multimedia type server thing. And it gives you a nice user interface, and it has an app for the Apple TV. And then you can basically, you know, stream those you know, your rips on your TV. So, I mean, I don't do that. I mean, I only rip the ones that I own. Like, I don't go and, you know, download any movies via torrent or anything like that. They're all movies I own. So I've done that in the past, and I just stopped. It got to be such a big job doing that, you know, ripping the Blu-rays and DVDs. It takes so much time, and then, you know, managing it on a media server somewhere. So I've been considering actually doing that again, and just maybe doing one or two movies a day for a year or something like that until I get through them all. Now, once I catch up, you know, when I get a new movie, I can just immediately rip it when I get it, and just keep adding that to my Plex server. So I think I might go with that, and hopefully that solves this problem for me of having these digital copies spread out amongst different services, because that really sucks, and I'm getting tired of, you know, not being able to watch half my collection digitally because it's on ultraviolet somewhere. Okay, that's basically all I had to talk about before getting into my reviews. So yeah, let's start off with the first movie I watched, which was Rampage from 2018. Here's a clip from the trailer.
It's weird. You like hang out with animals more than people.
Yeah, well, animals get me. I rescued George when he was 2 years old. George never would have survived on his own.
He definitely trusts you.
Last night, George was 7 feet and he weighed 500 pounds. George, you okay, buddy? You're scared. It's okay. This morning, he's 9 feet, pushing 1,000. What's happening to my friend?
Are you familiar with genetic editing? Changes will be incredibly unpredictable.
Is he the only one?
Oh, you didn't know about the 30-foot wolf?
Rampage is directed by Brad Peyton, written by Ryan Engel and Carlton Kuse, starring Dwayne Johnson, Naomi Harris, and Malin Ackerman. The description is, when three different animals become infected with a dangerous pathogen, a primatologist and a geneticist team up to stop them from destroying Chicago. So I watched this on Blu-ray in my theater. And I watched it alone because no one wanted to watch it with me. So, yeah, I don't know what happened, but in a moment of weakness somewhere in the last few months, I pre-ordered this Blu-ray. I don't know why, and I don't know what the reason for this was, but that's what I did. So I think I could probably attribute that to just being me being a fan of Dwayne Johnson, that's probably the reason I ordered it. You know, I'm a fan of him, so I think in a moment of weakness, I just decided, you know what, I'm gonna order this, and I did. So this film is based on a video game from the 90s. I think it was from the 90s, which is weird, but I don't know how popular it was. I vaguely remember it, and I think I played it a little bit. But, you know, I think it came out around the same time as maybe Mortal Kombat came out, or when Mortal Kombat was really huge, and that was the game that I mostly played at that time. I don't think I was super interested in Rampage. But I do remember playing it every once in a while and being a giant ape and breaking stuff in the city. So I do remember it a little bit, not a lot. But, you know, I wouldn't say that I remember enough of it, you know, not even close to enough to really know, you know, if what we see in this movie is actually what we saw in the game. I highly doubt it. I think it's probably just the premise of the game is, you know, what was used in the movie. Because I don't think there was too much of a story from the video game, from what I can remember, but I could be completely wrong. But I think it's vaguely and, you know, vaguely based on this video game. I mean, I went into this one with pretty low expectations. I think probably most people did. You know, even with Dwayne Johnson in it, I didn't think, you know, with even his charm and his charisma, that, you know, he could do enough to make this movie enjoyable. With that expectation going in, let's just say that when I watched it, I actually enjoyed this movie way more than I probably should have. And yeah, I honestly had a really fun time watching it. So I don't know if it was, you know, maybe a combination of just me having really low expectations for it, and you know, just that combined with, you know, maybe just my mood at the time I watched it, and maybe, you know, maybe the planets were aligned right or whatever. But for whatever reason, the day I picked to watch this, I ended up enjoying it. So that's a good thing. I mean, I'd rather watch a movie and enjoy it than hate it. So bravo. So I'd heard some people say that this movie tends to take itself a bit too seriously, or way too seriously. And, you know, that was a reason maybe people, you know, couldn't have fun with it. But I don't know. When I watched it, I felt the complete opposite. Like, I thought it didn't take itself seriously at all. I think it knew what it was and it just went for it, right? So, you know, maybe the opening scene maybe did feel a little bit too serious and maybe didn't fit the tone of the rest of the movie. You know, we open up in the space station that is pretty much ready to explode, and we find out there is some, you know, experiments going on regarding mutating animals. So there's this last astronaut that's on this space station, and she's trying to escape with these samples. And the thing is, she's being chased by this giant mutated rat. So that's kind of funny to say, but it's actually, there's nothing in the scene that is funny. Like, it's played pretty seriously. So needless to say, without spoiling what happens in the opening scene, the samples end up getting back to Earth and coming in contact with three animals. So a wolf, an ape, and a crocodile. I think it was a crocodile. I wasn't quite sure. They kind of just, when it comes in contact with the material, it's underwater, so you don't really get to see. And then the only time you get to see that thing is, you know, when it's fully mutated and it vaguely looks like a crocodile. So that's what I'm saying, a crocodile. And I think that's actually what the three things from the game were as well, a wolf, an ape, and a crocodile. So this scene, you know, I could see maybe this one's taking itself a little bit too seriously, but I think for the most part, the rest of the movie knows that it's completely ridiculous and that everything about it is ridiculous. And I think that plays well for, you know, the enjoyment factor. So like the description said, Dwayne Johnson, he plays a primatologist, and he's also a former Special Forces soldier. And yeah, he's working with this albino ape that's quite old and that he's been training for a long time. And so this albino ape is the ape that ends up getting mutated. So this ape, he knows sign language, which allows them to communicate, and, you know, allows him and Dwayne Johnson's character to communicate. And, you know, there's some pretty goofy dialogue and interaction between the ape and The Rock's character, David Okoye. And yeah, I think it's, you know, their communication, just their interaction. Like, I legitimately laughed at a lot of the stuff that they were doing together, and just, you know, kind of the banter they'd have back and forth. I think they played off each other pretty well, and That's actually surprising. So his, yeah, this Davis Okoye, the Rock's character, his character is actually given a pretty decent backstory, or at least, you know, somewhat of an interesting backstory. And there's a certain mystery about why, you know, his character prefers animals to humans. And over the course of the movie, you know, they slowly start to reveal reasons for this and just some stuff that happened in his past. We get to find out, you know, why he has a problem with, you know, spending time with humans or giving humans the time of day and would prefer to spend his time with these animals. So, you know, there's enough there to give his character some depth, and, you know, it's not going to win him any Oscars or anything like that. But, you know, there's enough there so we, you know, you're able to connect with his character as a viewer. And it's not just all about, you know, the story's not just all about conceding to these monsters, you know, destroying the city and, you know, them being the main event. I mean, they are the main event, but there is still a little bit more depth to these characters than, or at least one of these characters, which is nice. So there's another interesting character in this movie that I had a pretty good time with, and he works for a secret government agency only referred to as OGA, or Other Government Agency. So he is played by Jeffrey Morgan Dean from The Walking Dead. So he's the guy that plays the character Negan, and I guess he's one of the villains from the show, one of the maybe the worst villains of the show, other than maybe the zombies. So I stopped watching the show long before this Negan character showed up. The only reason I know of him is because of, what was it, last season's, or a couple seasons ago, the finale, he was going to kill one of the main characters. And then the season premiere last season, they reveal who he is and they show him killing him, and it was supposed to be pretty brutal. So I know that made a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe a little bit, but it made a pretty big buzz regarding that TV show. So that's the only reason I know who his character is. But yeah, like I said, I stopped watching that show quite a while ago, maybe season, at the mid-season break, maybe season two or season three, my wife and I both gave up on it. And I never gone back. People tell me I should go back because it got better, but I don't know. Isn't it like 9 seasons now or 10 seasons? I'm not going back and catching up 10 seasons. It's crazy town. Okay. So yeah, in this film, this Jeffrey Morgan Dean character, he knows, like, that actor knows that this film is completely ridiculous. And you can tell the way he's playing his character, because you can tell he's just having super fun with the character. And, you know, that knowing as a viewer that this movie is ridiculous, like, it really helps to add to the enjoyment, I think, knowing that this guy knows this movie is ridiculous and he's playing his character ridiculously. And I thought it was pretty, pretty enjoyable. So, you know, he had lots of corny lines and he kind of plays, I don't know what this guy really sounds like, but he was using like a real Southern accent, and he was, you know, lots of corny lines. Like when we first meet him, he says a line, I don't know the exact line, but it's something along the lines of, "When science craps the bed, I'm the one they call to change the sheets," something like that. He doesn't say craps the bed. He says the other words, the bed, but it's lots of stuff like that. And at first when he came onto the scene here, the first time we see him, I was like, this guy's kind of, I wasn't really buying it. He was seemed like he was a little bit too much and a little bit too cheesy. But as the film went on, I guess he grew on me and, ended up, yeah, really, really liking him. So, some more characters here. So the main villains, other than the mutated animals, because I guess they maybe are the real villains. But the main villains are this brother and sister team, and they're the ones that are, I guess his sister is the CEO of this company that is working on this technology to basically weaponize these mutations that they've been working on. And yeah, these two characters and the whole premise behind these characters are probably the worst thing about the film. Like, I don't know, these characters seem pretty one-dimensional. We don't know anything about them other than that they're trying to make money through this technology. And yeah, they're both bad for different reasons. Like, I don't know, the brother is super goofy, basically does what his sister says, and everything he does and says seems pretty fake and just, you know, overacted. And then the sister, I don't know, she just seems wooden. And I don't know. I think, you know, the film could probably, it probably gets away with these super terrible villains just because, I mean, they're obviously not, you know, the real villains of the movie. They're kind of just there to, you know, give some kind of reason to why these mutations exist and why we have these monsters. So, you know, you can, I guess you can forgive it for having these terrible characters, but they're in it probably more than I would have liked because every time they're on screen, it's pretty brutal. And by the end, the main, I guess the brother, he gets a little bit better. And I think there was some fun stuff with him near the end of the film. But I think the sister was bad just throughout the whole thing. So I think she is the person, I see her every once in a while. And I think she was the character, or not the character, the woman, the actor from one of those Ben Stiller movies where he, I can't remember the name of it, where they get married. They barely know each other and they get married and they go on a honeymoon and she's like a terrible person. I think it was her. I don't know her name. I should have looked it up beforehand. But yeah, they're easily the worst part of the movie. Their plan is ridiculous. Everything about their plan is ridiculous and makes no sense. But like I said, they're not the reason you're watching this movie. That's for sure. So, I mean, the main reason the people are watching this movie, I guess there's maybe two reasons, at least for me there was. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, I'm watching the movie because of him. I probably wouldn't watch this movie if he was not in it. And then you have the giant mutated animals destroying a city, Chicago in this case. So I think that's the two main reasons anyone's watching this movie. And, you know, if that's what you're looking for, you know, and that's kind of what you're looking forward to watching, then I think, you know, you will probably enjoy this movie. I think it's, you know, it kind of falls in the same category of maybe, say, Kong Skull Island and maybe the new, or that new Godzilla film. So Kong Skull Island, I enjoyed, you know, it wasn't exactly what I wanted, but I think it was probably along the same lines here as Rampage. And I mean, the new Godzilla film, I hated that movie. So that was Gareth Edwards a few years ago. A lot of people really love that movie, but for whatever reason, I hated that movie. But I've always been meaning to go back and watch it because maybe I missed something. Maybe I, you know, I got to give it another chance. But I think, you know, in both of those movies, it's not about the, you know, the people in the movies or the characters. It's about the monsters. And that's what this movie is as well. So, you know, that's why I say they kind of fall in the same, you know, the same category. It's just, you know, monsters being monsters and destroying stuff. And with this one, I think, you know, we do get a character that we actually do care about and, you know, has the charisma. So I think that's maybe what sets it apart from those other two movies is that we do have the monsters. Plus we have, you know, The Rock being The Rock and doing his Dwayne Johnson thing. So that's pretty good. So we get to see some cool stuff with the animals, mostly the wolf and the ape. There's a scene where early on in the movie, there's a scene where there's this military team sent out by the main villains. And they're trying to track down the wolf. So basically they're told to bring it in dead or alive. They just need a sample from it. So so there's a scene set in the, I guess it's in a forest somewhere where the wolf comes in contact with the whatever stuff mutates them. And it's very similar to scenes that we've seen so many times before. So like in Jurassic World where, you know, they're going out to try and take down the Indominus Rex. They send out that team and they basically get slaughtered. And then in Predator 2, if anyone's seen Predator 2 from, when was that, late 80s maybe or early? Yeah, it must have been late 80s. Predator 2 has a similar scene where, you know, they send out this team to try and take down a predator inside of a slaughterhouse where it sets up shop and they get slaughtered. And then, you know, another one, that Predator 2 scene is actually very similar to the scene from Aliens when the military team first lands on a LV-426 and they go into the hive looking for the lost citizens. And that's their first encounter with the aliens and then they get slaughtered. So it has a very similar feel to that. And I think, I don't know if that's what they were going for, but that's what it reminded me of. You know, that's just three examples of that type of scene, and I, you know, there's a bunch more like that, but that's what this one felt like. So yeah, it's, you know, it's not original or anything like that, but it was still fun to watch this wolf, this giant wolf, taking out this team. I was actually pretty surprised with this scene because it was actually pretty violent and gory, you know, for a PG-13 film. So that was interesting. You know, you get to see some of the soldiers' entrails and stuff like that. So I was not expecting that. Then I was also actually surprised to see Joe Manganiello. I think that's how you say his name in this role. So he was the lead guy for this military team. So we see him briefly in this military outfit, and you know, I guess maybe he's gonna be playing some character in a possible because he was in the end credit scenes for Justice League, and I can't remember which guy he's supposed to be playing in the Legion of Doom, but anyway, it's that character. He's the guy from what's the other movies? The male stripper movies, Magic Mike. So he's in those movies as well. He's that big guy. So anyways, once the monsters get to Chicago, then that's, you know, when we really get to see what we came for. So don't ask why they're heading to Chicago. The reason is super lame, and I can't believe they couldn't come up with a better idea to get them into a big city. But I mean, it has to do with that brother and sister team and their plan and this thing they do to get them to come to the city. It's just stupid and it makes no sense. But they get into the city, and then, you know, then everything kind of hits the fan. So basically, yeah, they're these beasts get into Chicago, and they're basically wreaking havoc on the city. Nothing can stop them. The military's there trying to take them out. Nothing can stop them. And, you know, I think for the most part, it gave me what I wanted here. You know, just these animals destroying the city, taking down buildings. So at one point, I think it was the Sears Tower. I don't know what it's called now. I don't think it's called the Sears Tower anymore. So the Sears Tower basically falls over. And that was a pretty good scene. And what is it? The Rock and this scientist he's with. Him and her, well, I don't want to give away how they survived that, but they end up surviving it, and The Rock says something like, I can't believe we survived that, and it's pretty funny. But anyway, I think, you know, for the most part, I think that the effects in this movie are decent. There was no time, you know, there wasn't anything here that looked super bad that it pulled me out of the experience. Like, for the most part, I bought what they were showing me, and yeah, it was what it was. So yeah, this film... It's, yeah, like I said, it's not going to win any awards or anything like that. And by most standards, it's probably not a very good movie. But like I said, I had a fun time watching it, and it defied my expectations in terms of entertainment value. So, you know, if you don't want to go into this looking for a smart science fiction film because, yeah, you're going to be super disappointed. I'm 100% confident that the science in this, in this film would not hold up to any type of scrutiny. But, yeah, I think if you're a fan of Dwayne Johnson, and come on, man, who isn't? And you just want to watch a big stupid movie, then, you know, I'd recommend giving Rampage a try. Like, I don't know, it took me by surprise. You know, there's a very good possibility that if I were to rewatch this, and I probably will one day, that I'm not going to like it nearly as much as I did the first time. Like, I remember with the reboot here of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, the Michael Bay one. I remember watching that first one, and I actually enjoyed it the first time, and I was super surprised. And then I watched it a second time with some friends, and yeah, I did not like it the second time. So I suspect possibly that might happen here, but maybe not, because I think, you know, The Rock delivers what you're expecting here. So yeah, one thing to note here, my 7-year-old son really wanted to watch this, and after watching it, I'm not sure I'd let him actually watch it right now. So mostly because of that scene where the military... team is trying to take down the wolf. Like I said, there's some gory stuff there, and I definitely would not be comfortable with him watching that right now. So yeah, I'm gonna probably hold off letting them watch this, because I think everything else maybe is, you know, I think it's fine, but yeah, that scene is a little bit out there, and I don't think he needs to be seeing that yet. So anyway, yeah, my rating for Rampage in 2018 is 3 out of 5.
Should we return my blue jacket?
Yes. And after a very intense conversation with their saleswoman that ended with both of us in tears, I got you a full refund.
I want it back.
Absolutely.
This computer isn't taking my password.
Ah! Oh, no, that.
It's my laptop.
Well, bring me my laptop.
Wake me up at midnight, but don't startle me. Play a lullaby or something that just slowly increase the volume.
What are you still doing here?
I'm always the last one here.
I'm always the last one here.
The two of them are always in this office. Let's just lock them in a room together so they can have sex with each other. When they're boning, we're free.
We wanted to shut down the elevator for a few minutes so two people could fall in love.
Whoa, who's this guy?
You need to go, sir.
It's go time.
Oh, my God. This is how it always starts in my nightmare.
What are you doing?
What is he doing?
Stop doing that, please. Stop that right now.
I need to
stop
be that. Free of this.
We know everything about them, what they like, what they don't like. We are the men behind the curtain.
Does Rick have good Yankees tickets?
No. He watches from the bleachers like a common peasant.
Yeah, of course he does.
We need the people in these two seats to make out. Kiss!
The world's our oyster!
Taking the rest of the day?
I'm gonna be in late tomorrow.
We did it.
We made two miserable people happy.
I'm proud of us.
Yes!
Do you guys know each other?
We're friends.
That's nice. Why'd you say it like that? Why'd your voice go up?
That was a clip from 2018's Set It Up, directed by Claire Scanlon, written by Katie Silberman, starring Zoe Deutsch, Glenn Powell, and Lucy Liu. The description is, two corporate executive assistants hatch a plan to matchmake their two bosses. So I watched this one on Netflix in my theater with my wife. And this, like I said, is film number 17 on my 52 films directed by women project. So yeah, like I had mentioned, Set It Up is a romantic comedy, and it is also a Netflix original film. So now I've spoken in the past about how Netflix original films have a pretty bad track record, well, at least with me. You know, I'm always excited when these new Netflix films, I get these emails saying you might be interested in this new film coming out in a week or whatever. And they're Netflix original movies, and they always sound really exciting to me, and the premise always sounds really cool, and I'm really excited to see them. And then I watch them, and I am sorely disappointed. So recently, I've been a little bit more cautious before watching any of these or committing to watch any of these, because I know there was a couple that just, you know, came out in the last few weeks that I was really looking forward to watching, but I just held off and haven't watched them yet. So I think one of them was Tao, which sounded pretty cool. And then I took a brief little glimpse at some of the reviews on Letterboxd. And yeah, like I think I'd mentioned this before, there were like 1-star reviews and 1/2-star reviews. So I said, okay, maybe I'll skip this one. And there's this other one that came out. I can't remember the name. It's kind of a long name, something about a white-tailed deer hunter or something, starring Josh Brolin. And that one actually sounds pretty cool too. I haven't actually snuck any peeks at the reviews for that one. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that one's all right as well. But anyway, like I said, I've been more cautious with committing to watching any of these. But with Set It Up, I did hear some good things about it, and I didn't really hear anything bad about it. Everything seemed to say that it was a pretty fun watch, so I decided to go for it. And so yeah, I have been mentioning this for a few weeks that I was planning to watch this, but yeah, I just never got around to it, or just didn't work out with what I was planning to, or what I ended up watching. So finally got to it this week and was able to watch it. And as a bonus, I got to watch it with my wife. So that was good. We had a little bit of a kind of date night in the house. She doesn't watch a lot of movies with me. We used to watch more together, but yeah, more recently she hasn't been watching a lot with me. So it was good to be able to watch one with her this time. So like I mentioned, this one is starring Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell. So those names might not, you know, ring a bell with you. You might not be able to put any faces to those names, but they actually starred together in the recent movie by Richard Linklater, Everybody Wants Some. So that one was released in 2016, I think. And so, yeah, that one was about a group of, it basically follows this college baseball team over the course of an evening or the course of a weekend or something like that. And it's very similar in style to his, Dazed and Confused, where they just follow this, you know, this group of teenagers over a night. So this is similar to that, but it's with this college team, college baseball team. And yeah, I really liked that movie. It was a good time. And, you know, in that movie, Glenn Powell's character was pretty hilarious, and he was probably, you know, the best part of that film. And so, yeah, I was looking forward to seeing him here as well. And Zoe Deutsch, yeah, she was in that movie as well, like I said, but I mean, I remember her character and I remember everything, you know, that her character did, but I don't remember like it being Zoe Deutsch. Like, I don't remember it, her being her face or anything like that. So I can't really, you know, comment much on that, but she was in it. And yeah, so it was cool to see him reunite here for this one. So yeah, if you haven't seen Everybody Wants Some from Richard Linklater, I'm a big fan of his. I would recommend checking that one out. So let's see here. What else was he in? So Zoe Deutsch was also in Why Him? So that was one, came out a couple years ago, starring David Franco and Bryan Cranston, where David Franco is like this tech billionaire, but he's like, he's kind of unprecedented, I guess, in some of the stuff he does. And so Bryan Cranston plays Zoe Deutsch's father, and he disapproves of this marriage that's going to happen. So that movie was, I think I talked about it once. It was all right. Nothing special. And then, Glenn Powell, he was also in Hidden Figures. He played John Glenn in that one, if you can remember him from that. Okay, so what do we got here? So they play Harper and Charlie. So Harper is Zoe Deutsch's character, and Charlie is Glenn Powell's character. And yeah, like the description said, they're these overworked assistants of some pretty successful kind of power-playing executives. So Lucy Liu plays a sports writer for ESPN who writes for like one of ESPN's most popular blogs. And she is, so Harper, she is Lucy Liu's assistant. And then Taye Diggs is the boss of Charlie. And Taye Diggs' character, Rick, he's like some high profile, big, powerful venture capitalist. So anyway, so Harper and Charlie, they hatch this plan to see, you know, to see if they can set their two bosses up romantically, thinking that if they can, you know, get them romantically involved, then their lives would get easier because if those two are dating, you know, and have a relationship, then they're not going to be spending so much time at the office. So, I mean, the first part of this movie really, you know, accentuates just how crazy Harper and Charlie's lives are, trying to be the assistants to these two, you know, basically crazy executives or whatever they are. And even the film opens up, you know, just with various, kind of like this montage of various assistants doing ridiculous things for their, for the people they're assisting. And yeah, oftentimes through that, just the early part of this movie is like, why do they even work for these people? Like, I could not imagine, you know, being at the office at midnight, getting my boss something to eat or something to drink. Like, that's crazy, but whatever. So maybe, I think that stuff happens. It's just out of my world. So, okay. So, you know, just knowing the premise of the story, it's pretty easy to predict where it's going to go. And yes, it goes pretty much exactly where you'd expect it to go. And yeah, it basically has every beat that you'd expect from a romantic comedy. But despite that, it is a super fun watch. Like, the main cast is really awesome. Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell, they have great chemistry. So you can just see it on the screen and they're awesome together. And yeah, I had no trouble believing the relationship was real, or, you know, the transition the relationship goes through. It felt real to me as well. I never doubted it at one time. And then Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs, they come off, you know, as these over the top power players, and their characters, you know, they walk the line between being believable and just kind of being cartoon characters. But, you know, I think their over the topness, you know, it helps to get the viewer, I guess, at least it helped me to buy into Harper and Charlie's relationship, and it kind of gets you rooting for them to succeed in their plan. Like, just because these, you know, Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs characters are so out there and asking for such ridiculous things, that, you know, you really want, you know, this plan to work to get, you know, Charlie and Harper get their lives to be a little bit easier, because you like those characters so much. So I think that those two dynamics between, you know, these different characters really help me buy into, you know, the main story here. The supporting characters, they're pretty decent as well. So Glenn Powell's character, Charlie, he has a roommate, who is a gay friend, and yeah, he was fun. He was, you know, it was a good character and I liked him, but I don't know. It's like, so he's his gay friend, and we see him, you know, playing into some of those stereotypical things we often see with the, like, quote unquote gay friends in these types of movies. So, like I said, he was funny, and, you know, there was nothing offensive or anything about it, but I was just also a little bit disappointed, you know, to see, you know, that we're still doing this thing in films with, you know, the gay friend thing. It's just, I don't know. I think we're beyond that. I think we can move past that by now. So, the soundtrack of this movie, I really liked it a lot. So there's lots of, it wasn't a soundtrack that I'd expect from a movie like this. It had a lot of older songs in it. A lot of these older songs were featured, and I found that to be pretty interesting. And it gave the film just a different vibe for me. You know, there was like Stevie Wonder, Dire Straits, Huey Lewis and the News. I think there was some Third Eye Blind in there from, you know, the 90s. So it was a cool soundtrack, and I think it really helped to, you know, kind of define this movie as being something a little bit different than what we're maybe seeing today from romantic comedies. Yeah, I mean, the ending of this movie, basically the final scene in this movie, was really awesome. I really liked how this movie ended. You know, there's a scene from earlier in the film, which I didn't really think too much of outside of that particular scene. And it actually comes back with a really good payoff at the end of the film. And that was, you know, I was not expecting that. I was a big fan of how this played out at the end. Yeah, I think it ended in a fairly believable way. And I think, you know, at least, you know, three of the four characters, the main characters here, they have a pretty good arc in this movie. And, you know, you could probably argue maybe even that, you know, the fourth character, main character here, that, you know, they probably had an arc as well. We don't really get too much of a resolution on that one, but I think you could probably argue that, you know, all four of them had a pretty decent arc. And yeah, like, it's just good to see, you know, these characters, they all, you know, learn something by the end of the film that's going to make them, you know, better people. And maybe not better people, they'll at least enjoy their lives a little bit better now. So I think it had a really good resolution. I really liked where this film ended up going. So yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot to say about this movie other than, you know, it was really good and it was a charming romantic comedy. Yeah, it's kind of hard to put my finger on why I liked it so much. I think the script was really good. There was no shock humor, you know, or overly crude jokes. It kind of felt like maybe a romantic comedy from 10 or 15 years ago. And I think that's a good thing in my books. Like, I think some of the newer stuff is a little bit, they do go a little bit more in the direction of kind of shock humor, these crude jokes, but I think this one stays clear of most of that. And it's, you know, just feels, I don't know, maybe it feels more wholesome or something, but I don't know. There's something about it that just feels different than some of the stuff we're seeing today. So yeah, it definitely feels a little bit that it could have fit in, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. But I think, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it just comes down to Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell's charisma and just their chemistry on the screen. Like, I think those two just really sell this movie, and I think that's probably the main reason that it works so well for me, because those characters are, the characters and those actors are top-notch for me here in this movie. So yeah, I mean, really easy to recommend this one. It's definitely a great date movie, and I think even if you're not a fan of romantic comedies, I think this one might surprise you. Like, it's not cheesy, it's not overly mushy. Like, it, I think it finds a pretty good balance just between the romance and the comedy. And I don't know, I think it's just charming. I think that's the only way to, I think that's the best way to describe it. It's a charming romantic comedy, and it's quite enjoyable. Just go watch it. So yeah, I mean, it's nice to finally see a Netflix film that actually delivers a fun, entertaining experience. Maybe there is some hope for them yet. So yeah, my rating for Set It Up is 4 out of 5. So that's all I got for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Mission Impossible Fallout. So that opened this past weekend, and didn't get a chance to see it this weekend, but I'm going to go see it tomorrow night with a couple of my friends. So my one friend I'm going to be going with, him and his wife, he's a pretty big fan of the Mission Impossible franchise. Like I said in the past, I like the movies, I'm not a huge fan of them, but I don't know, I've been hearing some pretty good things about this, so I have some high expectations for Fallout. And then, you know what, I think I'm going to actually watch, back in my young days, I used to be a skateboarder, and I like to try and be a BMX rider, but back in the day, there were these two movies that came out in 1986 that I watched probably hundreds of times each. That is Rad, the BMX film, about Helltrack, and then Thrashin', a skateboarding film starring Josh Brolin. So these came out in, yeah, like I said, 1986, kind of when I was starting. I was probably already into both of them at that time, but these were movies that I watched ad nauseum. So anyway, the reason I'm considering watching them again here this this coming week is because Rad was never released on DVD or Blu-ray, and there's no way to watch it right now other than some illegal way or getting a bootleg or something like that. So anyway, I was able to order, which I presume is a bootleg from Amazon, of Rad, a DVD. So that arrived a couple weeks ago. So I'm looking forward to watching that again because I have not seen that in a few years, and I'm looking forward to checking that out. So I figured I'd do a kind of a two-movie extreme sports edition with Rad and Thrashin. I don't know how much I'll talk about them, but I'll definitely, you know, definitely get into them a bit. I haven't come up with a movie I'm going to watch for my 52 Films Directed by Women project. I'll take a look at that and find something and hopefully get to that also this week. So, you can always find more episodes of this podcast at red7cast.com. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. And if you want to help me out, you can head over to iTunes and search for the Red 7 MovieCast podcast. And when it comes up, give me a rating and or review. That'll help me maybe get some new listeners, get in front of some other ears. So if you have an Amazon Echo, you can just say, Alexa, play the Red 7 MovieCast podcast, and it should fire up the most recent episode for you. If you enjoyed this episode or you know someone who might enjoy it, feel free to share it with them. And you can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at HJNaidu. That's HJNAIDU. So until next time, just keep watching movies. Thanks for listening. Bye.